Hello, colleagues. Thank you for a kind introduction. My topic will be actually split into several parts, but they may be united around this, I'd say, arbitrary title. But what I'll be dealing with is that when one is doing an evolutionary study, normally we plot species and are trying to define their relations and history of those relations, and if we are lucky, we are trying to find the forces which shaped current diversity. Or in other words, we are trying to find the traces of past events which shaped current diversity. But normally there is one link missing, which is when we are using genetic markers to define evolutionary history, we often forget that, first of all, the appearance of new mutation is individual event. So evolution starts not at specific level, it starts at individual level. And it is very, very important to link the two stages. And even macroevolutionary events, when you have an organism with inverted half of ribosomal RNA gene, for example, happened some time ago in one single organism, and the fate of that organism actually was lucky, because we are still seeing the traces of that event. I am coming from institute which concentrates on studies at Lake Baikal. Baikalian diversity is extremely high, and I will not waste poetry on characterizing that. But to be brief, it exceeds approximately twice the number of species described from northern hemisphere north to Lake Baikal. So all those mountains, rivers, marshes, skies harbor twice species less than Little Lake Baikal. And we are very much interested in the mechanisms which generated that huge diversity. The work on the mechanisms generating Baikalian diversity, as any other ecological and population work, is multidisciplinary. And like in any multidisciplinary work, the main difficulty always is trying to understand each other properly. Thus, the motivation of the work presented here. We often have to deal with ecological models, with evolutionary models. And for a biologist or geneticist, it is not always easy to understand what the colleagues are actually doing and to understand their results. When it became crucial for us to incorporate into our studies ecological and other models or simulations, I will not go into philosophy here, we had to adapt many models so that they would become understandable. What I mean by saying understandable, I'll tell a little bit later on. But the major part of that is that we would need to obtain results of a simulation of a computer experiment in a shape, in a form, which would be recognizable and somehow accessible by a biologist. What I mean is that here we have one of the equations which was, it comes from this work published in Nature, and we actually started from that equation with my late colleague Simovsky, Sergei Simovsky, but let me tell you that in first evolutionary paper, which we wrote together, and he's a mathematician, this equation was given, and I asked my co-author, why did you put this equation? It's not used anymore in the text. For clarity, I will never forget that answer. Well, it is possible to understand that. It is possible to appreciate that, but not so easy. Although this is very, very, very important equation. If you start to plot, I will come to this particular plot later on in the lecture, but here I give it as an example of useless computer simulation. There is one, it can be useless for myriads of reasons, but here there is one, number of individuals. In normal ecosystem, for normal ecologist and geneticist, it is only possible to roughly estimate this number of animals, and it is not easy. So to calculate, for example, fishes in Lake Baikal, one would have to kill all of them. Would the Greens allow us to do that? I doubt. This kind of simulations can be of very, very restricted value. This is another simulation which actually is a result of transfer of the equation which was given on the second slide into individual-based modeling. And here you have ecological character, which actually, although sounds much more abstract, it is an easier thing for understanding. And here we have time expressed in reproductive cycles or in generations, in other words. But to be correct, I'd call it reproductive cycles. Ecological character is actually character. It could be morphological or physiological or whatever, which plays the major part in interaction of a given organism with the environment. The commonplace here, as an example, is the size of a beaker in Darwin finches, in birds. So the bigger bird has its beaker. Beaker, for those who have some problems in English, is bird's mouth. The bigger it has the beaker, the bigger nuts are more comfortable for the animal to eat. So, and here you have, here you have a population split into two parts, and then somewhere here reproductive isolation may occur, and you just see how things happen. So as a tool of understanding, this representation is much more valuable to a biologist. I wouldn't say that it is as valuable for a mathematician, but as a consumer, I'd appreciate that much more. So, individual-based simulation may result in a form which is absolutely comfortable for a geneticist or an ecologist, molecular ecologist, I mean, of modern times. So, if each object in a simulation has a property of mutating sequence, here it could be protein sequence or it could be non-coding nuclear sequence, then as a result of a simulation, like what was given on a previous slide, we may have a set of sequences. And that simulates directly exactly what experimental scientists are doing in the field. So we are sampling animals from populations. It can be killing sampling. It can be fin clipping for fish, whatever. And have sequences. Or we have sets of microsatellites, but it is not shown here. There is no major difference in that. So we have exactly the same type of data as we are dealing in experiment, so that we may compare directly the result of a simulation and the result of experiment. And if we are correct in our simulation, then well, if we are happy, we may obtain the same pattern in a tube and as we have in computer. But on the other hand, what we may do is we may apply all techniques, all computer techniques of phylogenetic or population inferences to the results of simulations so that we know in this case, the history, we know the scenario of evolutionary events, and we know the result. We may compare if there is the same pattern or it is different pattern. We may go even further. We may estimate if our sampling and sequencing program is sufficient to resolve particular evolutionary or population or whatever problem. So, if, for example, we are sampling and sequencing in order to estimate migration between two populations, we may say that, okay, 50 sequences, 1 kb long each, with diversity like 2%, total, is it sufficient to estimate this particular value at, for example, 20%, or we need to sequence more? Here I must say that when we started to apply things like that to real sequencing programs together with our European colleagues, we rapidly found out a couple of cases which I'd call over-sequencing. So they sequenced twice as much. If they stopped maybe 200 sequences ago, they would knew exactly the same and almost with the same precision. Things like that happen. Obtaining results in a shape which is compatible with what you're doing in a lab may be very important, and this is one of major points which I wanted to underline in this lecture. Still, I think some people would not understand me if I didn't say few words about our major object. So, where this is the first priority for us to apply our approaches, which is Lake Baikal. And the major diversity of Baikalian species actually are part of so-called species flocks, since I am going to use this term many times, let me define it. So this is a group of species which evolved in confines of the same ecosystem from a single ancestor. These species flocks may consist of thousands of species. The most famous, and they are peculiar mostly to giant ancient lakes like Lake Baikal, Lake Tanganyika, but they are found in super rich ecosystems like in the tropic rainforest or in some seas, in oceanic ecosystems, deep water ecosystems. So there are super rich communities of species living sympatrically. Mechanisms generating these communities are, well, still under heavy discussion. But what is clear that for some reason their speciation, separation, became profitable, which is quite a peculiar thing. So, and here that little fish is one of the representatives of species flocks found in Tanganyika. Here you have data coming from our Belgian and Austrian colleagues, evolutionary history in genus Lamprologus and group of genera which are closely related to this. You see, those species are very diverse. That point is somewhere about 5 million years ago, so that was pretty fast evolutionary events. But there were a lot of network speciation cases. And now it is still under discussion if this hypothesis presented here is true or not. And in order to design a phylogenetic test, now we are planning to apply this approach, which I am going to describe here. But those who seen Lake Baikal may see that, well, actually, on a photo, the two lakes look a little bit similar when it is green winter here. But I forgot. This is another example of species flocks, molluscan species flock. This is Lake Baikal. Here it is difficult to mix it with Tanganyika. And that's where I will take most of examples further on. We did a lot of simulations about amphipods. They are invertebrates, you see. This is one of them, Acanthogamerus. This is the richest species flock in Lake Baikal. There are about 400 described species, and by the rate of discovery, it is estimated that there are going to be a little bit more than 1,000 species described or living there at the moment. This species flock is ancient, so that this point, is approximately 30 million years old. There are several two flocks given here. This is because they are split by non-Baikalian species. So amphipods in Lake Baikal are polyphyletic. And so imagine, there are two species flocks which throughout their evolution made the same evolutionary challenges. So like ensembles of species had to respond to the same, cooling down of climate or drying of climate, etc. Or Well, I will also tell a few words. That's why this picture here is that all those amphipods are infested with Microsporidia. Microsporidians are intracellular parasites, some of which spread like normal parasites through contacts, through water, whatever. Some of them are passed vertically, which means that they are passed from mother to the progeny. Since those species never leave germ line, they live in immortal cells. So formally they are immortal. And they become, because they parasite only in immortal germ cells. It's a genetic paradigm that each body consists of two sorts of cells. One, immortal germ cells, which are passed and cannot split into generations, and soma, which is mortal. If they parasite only immortal cells, they become immortal themselves. But they cannot be passed through males. So they become mortal as soon as they start to parasite male. And they developed numerous mechanisms to avoid that. This is that starts from selective killing of males, inspiring females to start parthenogenesis or feminization of males. Basically, they are three mechanisms. But they still have to keep few males in order to provide survival to their hosts. If the host is extinct, they are extinct as well. So there must be compromise. They must compromise with the host. But here is the first Baikalian paradox I am going to speak about, which is that if there is one species of host, it may tolerate only one single species of a parasite. Otherwise, it is extinction. Because two species of parasite, they start to compete for the host, and they kill it. So, that said, we go back to the tree of Baikalian species. And here we have Macrohectopus, which is pelagic amphipod. It comprises something like 90% of invertebrate biomass, of macroinvertebrate biomass in Lake Baikal. And it is infested by two parasites. So we are using modeling in order to see what's going on. If it is extinct, then whole lake is extinct. And since it holds 20% of world freshwater, then it is important for everybody. But what we see here is huge diversity of Microsporidians, and they are first parasite species flocks found. Another example, another part of motivation of this study is young species flocks. Young species flock, and here you have three representatives of mollusk genus Baikalia. It belongs to endemic family of mollusk, Baikalidae, but their evolutionary history is very short. So here it is, I'm going to speak about those four species. And this point of radiation is only 3.5 million years ago. What we actually started to model, and now I'm shifting to modeling at last, is that this is a part of network. This is not median network. This is minimum spanning tree. Most parsimonious of ancestor species, which is Baikalia carinata, and four other species, actually mostly three. One of them is represented by only one spot, so it's not so interesting. But here we have a set of species. They are good species. They are ecologically distinctive. They are genetically distinctive. They are morphologically easily recognized. But evolutionary relations of the four species cannot be represented correctly without losing important details by a binary evolutionary tree, or by a species tree. Because, you see, there are two populations, one western, one eastern. They gave rise, actually, to two separate species each. And you cannot plot that on a tree. We are interested, actually, in evolutionary mechanisms, which generated that. And one final introductory remark is that all evolution, all evolutionary models I'm going to speak about later must take into account changes in environment. Here we have Shackleton cycles. This is humidity or temperature curve. Those who cannot see, this is zero. It's today, and this is 450,000 years ago, and this is average global temperature. Or this is one curve, and green curve is CO2 levels. Carbon dioxide. So this is today. This is what they call global warming. But this is nothing really unusual. It happened before and will happen after. And those deviations happened. Oof! Sorry for mistakes. Here, let me. This set of simulations I am sketching here was actually devoted to my attempt of explaining a paradox. So we have a lot of species in Lake Baikal, really a lot. There are no specialists there. There is no co-evolution between the species documented so far. Because in Lake Tanganyika, in Black Sea, you have all those crabs and shells. And you want to ask something? because I was told that questions you must interrupt me with the questions. The crab has its claw, which is exactly like the shell it eats. And the shell becomes bigger, the claw becomes bigger, and then the crab has to carry his claw with other legs. So that happens. In simple form, that can be represented like this. It's value. L is missing here, sorry for that. So you have some ecological character, like size of that claw, like size of beaker, like anything, and distribution of animals. So generalists have wide distributions, so that in changing environment, they always have somebody who is able to consume the new possibilities or to meet new challenges. And specialists have very narrow distributions. Well, to give you an example, super specialist is Chinese panda, which is which eats only one species of bamboo. It cannot be fed with any other species of bamboo. Only one species of bamboo, yes. That's why the difficulty of keeping them in captivity. So it eats bamboo shoots. Well, it is dominating species in the province. but if this bamboo is extinct, panda is extinct as well. It has not. It's dead end. Normal simulation would of species interacting with environment would involve environment capacity. In case of panda, it would be few species of bamboo living together, and only this bamboo is good for the panda, and the panda is here, maybe some panda marginals, actually outlaws, still may eat some other bamboo. They are on the sides. But mainstream panda eats her bamboo, that's it. They are pairs of species like prey and predator pairs, described from many, 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 many ecosystems. But what is important for Lake Baikal is that due to environmental changes, this distribution of environmental capacity shifts, like temperature is shifting and temperature adaptation must shift together with it. So, environmental shift causes moving selection. Depending on the speed and actually amplitude of this of this shift, it may cause, well, if it shifts that way, the guys who are here have disadvantage, and the guys here have unfair advantage, so that this peak starts to move slowly towards right, but only within diversity which pre-existed. So it increases a little bit due to mutation process, but that takes time. So if that shifts occur too fast and too far, too strong, then this species is extinct. What we have in Lake Baikal, which is in temperate zone, so we have huge environmental deviations during a year, something like in water, it would be 30 degrees, which is for water animals is a lot. So that shift becomes periodic. And the models, if you apply this individual-based modeling to this this case, you may show that fast and wide sweeps will give advantage to generalists. So, if it goes too fast like this, the guys living in both sides have advantage, and this peak becomes wider. So the very slow shifts will give better opportunities to specialists. So if there are no shifts at all in stable environment, super specialists occur. So that those distributions of ecological characters become very narrow. And in at least my experiments, it results that they extinct too fast. That's because the max numbers are quite low, and due to stochastic reasons, the super specialists become extinct. It could be artifact of simulation, most likely. But anyway, super specialists are much less stable. So here you have the results of initial run. Here grows the amplitude of environmental changes, and here grows the frequency. Black zone is extinction. Blue zone is generalists. Red zone are specialists, when the specialists have advantage, and gray zone, where stronger computers would have advantage because of the number of objects dwelling simultaneously in a computer. And that's why actually individual-based modeling is so depending on the performance of computing. So, once again, I'm reminding you the Shackleton cycles and reminding you the fact that in spite of more than one century of systematic scientific studies of Lake Baikal fauna, there are no evidences for any co-evolution or any specialized species. Actually, all studies trying to find and characterize food specificity between related species, etc., often fail. So all food spectra overlap. Generalism seems to be, so to say, a flag of Baikalian fauna. And those actually quite crude simulations may help to understand why exactly this may be the fact. Unfortunately, the results of sequences extracted from those animals, they are not yet ready, not yet processed. But there is one prediction of this model which is yet to be tested. Those environmental changes have higher amplitude closer to surface of the lake. So shallow water species must be much more affected. For them, amplitude of changes would be much more than it at a bigger depth. So we may expect the shift towards specialism with increase of depth. The only thing which is which makes testing difficult is that abyssal zone of the lake is relatively young. Evolutionary history there is much shorter than in shallow water organisms. This is one thing, and another that obviously shallow water organisms are much better studied than the deep water ones. But environmental changes are not the only source of subdivisions and and not the only force shaping evolution of organisms. Here I will give you example of one amphipod, which is called Gmelinoides fasciatus. And here you see that although it is of Baikalian origin, then it spread widely. And now it actually occurs in a wide zone here, competing with local gammarus. But people from my group studied population genetics of this amphipod, and here you have a sketch of a tree of four populations. So this one, this population is here, it occurs here, and unlike other populations, it is infected by several species of Microsporidia who compete for the same host. We spent a lot of time trying to find geological events which could be responsible for this bottleneck. You see, this population has no diversity if compared to those populations. These are based on sequencing of the former fragment of cytochrome oxidase first subunit. So there is no diversity here. It could be the result of recent extinction and then very wide population expansion, which happened only in this area due to tectonic event. But apparent MRCA of all those animals, most recent common ancestor, existed something a little bit more than 10,000 years ago. So that was on human memory. And we would have archaeological even evidences for a catastrophe which would happen approximately by that time. There were catastrophes, but before. Simulation shows that I'm not giving the results, the pictures of this simulation, but varying pressure by parasites may follow the results of varying environmental pressure and create the effect of apparent bottleneck. And now let me shift to an example of individual based simulations in much more details, because before I gave you only sketches. If we are interested in adaptations to environmental challenges, we must be interested in evolutionary mechanisms which generated sets of proteins where coordinated changes occur. So this set of simulations were inspired by work of the missing chairman of the session, who studied coordinated substitutions for a long time. So I will not stop at this. Just one brief example. So if we have two side radicals, two amino acids, very often there is a restriction by 3D structure of a protein, which would require that the total volume of this pair would be constant. So this would be good and that would be good, but there is no transition between the two conditions. We actually came to the necessity of explaining this, because in previous trees, which I showed, based on CO1 sequences, we had a lot of things like that. And that had to be explained somehow. If you use protein sequences to build a tree, then you have to understand what's going on there. And to understand what was going on, we had to understand how this may happen. Otherwise, all those trees would be, about which I spoke before, would be incorrect. It would be not understandable. So here we used individual-based modeling as a tool of understanding. So molecular evolution, on which all our evolutionary speculations are based. So, here, what the main points? There is no obvious transition from one state to another. All intermediate states are deleterious. So, if transition from this state to that state requires two yellow balls, then it's unstable. Or two red balls, it's unstable. But somehow it happened. So that's why we are going to do the simulations. So those groups of co-evolving amino acids may consist of many amino acids residues. And correlated groups are quite common, I'd say too common, in proteins. So, we use the same apparatus as was described before to elucidate the population mechanism allowing coordinated evolution of amino acid residues, and using computer simulation of microevolutionary events at individual and population level. We wanted to find the conditions favoring coordinated evolution. So that's why it is simulation at population level. We want to see how macro evolutionary event would happen at micro level, at microevolutionary level. And if we are lucky, we'd like to design a statistical test allowing one to study coordinated evolution and or to take it into account if necessary. We used individual-based models where each organism dwelling in computer would be hermaphroditic. In each cycle at each reproductive cycle, it would choose its role, if it will be male or female. The only difference between males and females was that the females had maternally inherited nucleotide marker, which would simulate mitochondrial marker. In our case, CO1, for example. But all organisms were diploid, and all of them had age limit measured in reproductive cycles. For example, if you already took part in five reproductive cycles, you are obliged to die. Fitness depends on a protein sequence. So each protein, and the number of progeny is Poisson distributed. Here, mitochondrial marker is described. The main thing here is mitochondrial marker doesn't affect fitness. More important is nucleogen. It consists of 20 amino acids, but we didn't use any particular substitution model. they can be taken into account later. But each substitution was equiprobable, and each residue had some property which could be measured in arbitrary units varying from 0 to 19. It could be a model of volume of a residue. It could be a model of hydrophobicity, whatever. It's just some number, a unique number for each amino acid. And then we simulated non-neutral coordinated evolution by defining a group of amino acid residues for which there was one condition, that the sum of properties of those properties should remain constant. And if due to mutations this property is changed in one of amino acids, then this allele of this gene also has decreased viability, decreased fitness. So that this is the measure of fitness. Like due to a mutation, organism loses its fitness, but it can be restored by a mutation in some other position. So in other terms, the aim of this simulation was to find a set of population conditions which would favor that strategy. So, the simulation involved the following interactions between organisms. So, the organisms who reached maximal age were allowed to die. Each of the survivors determined its sex for this round of reproduction. There is density-dependent decrease of survival rate. So it was logistic growth. The denser are organisms, the more they compete with each other. So, so there are no stable families. The pairs are formed during each reproductive cycle, and they produce children. The viability of children, the probability of them passing to their first reproductive stage, depends on the genotype. Nuclear genotype, and there was perfect full dominance was assumed there. So the allele which has higher fitness dominates. So this cycle went on and on. And here we have this picture which just describes that, yes, they do live in computer. That what happens at different average number of progeny. So population reaches some stable level. Here we have a group of four amino acids co-evolving. But this picture actually was not the initial one. We browsed a lot of conditions like the degree of competition between generations, like like number of progeny, etc., and we didn't find any coordinated evolution. So then we decided to make a shock. So at this point, environmental shock occurs. And for example, if before the value, optimal value for the group was 30, now it jumps to 45 after that. Here you see that because of this jump, the population number drops, but then if they are mutants, population recovers. Here we tried sets of different numbers of amino acids just to find no difference. Sometimes one could see the slight differences in kinetics of recovery, but if peptides were sampled from those populations, we didn't find any coordinated evolution. Well, this is some other representation of the same results. So here you have the value of this property, here you have generation, and here you have abundances. So sometimes there is a certain polymorphism, like it is seen here. But if you have that switch which was shown on the first picture, what we have is that one dominating allele or haplotype goes extinct and another haplotype substitutes it. I tried to do two optimal values to find no coordinated evolution as well. So I am skipping that, but let me describe in more details this picture. Here you have this blue line, which is heterozygosity in this group of co-evolving amino acids. And you see that if you have one jump of optimal value, and then after several generations, many generations actually, the jump back to the original, then you have increased number of heterozygous organisms. Here, the kinetics looks very different. So this was the original, second value. And the jump back gives rise to this peak, and this is new and old optimal haplotype. But to make long story short, if we look at the amino acid sequences, this was the starting haplotype, and this is new haplotype. It has exactly the same number, the same value of this property, but different amino acid composition in almost all progeny, except for some heterozygous. So, double shift of optimal value results in coordinated substitutions. Once again, I would here remind you the Shackleton curve of environmental sequences. To me, this result means that periodic and dramatic shifts of environmental challenges actually causes coordinated evolution, which we see, okay, I already told that, in Baikalian animals. Very preliminary conclusions from that study are that the number of group members must be more than two, and coordinated substitutions become more frequent with the increase of group members. Second is periodic shift of optimum of the optimum promotes coordinated substitutions. And the new optimal value of a property must be reached in a single mutation. Actually, this strategy may have not an not only an explanatory value, but also may help to design a strategy if you for a selection, for example, of new microorganisms or things like that. So the individual-based models may help even there. Well, briefly, that's what I wanted to tell you today. Thank you for your attention. Any questions?
Okay, please.
This is actually an important question, but this is in experimental data. If you have, for example, sets of sequences of CO1, basically that's what we have. We may apply just normal criteria like TS transition transversion ratio to pick out sites where evolution occurs under selection. And we may use a program written by Dmitry Afonikov to find coordinated evolution in residues independently. Original idea when we just started to study that was that compensating mutation would occur and spread under positive selective pressure. That was not the case. We could not find, we found few cases, but, average level. So for experimental data, it is like that. For simulations, we just know. We have this protein, which I described, consisting of two parts. One part is important for organism's viability, and the other part is not important. So this is neutral part. There is additional marker of neutral evolution, which is mitochondrial. Nucleotide sequence. So, but in the results of simulation so far cannot simulate this evolution under certain selective pressure. This is, on one hand, this is a problem. On the other hand, if for the coordinated evolution to occur, no selection is required, so selection is not among minimal requirements for that. This could be important per se. Did I answer?
Okay, any more questions? Okay, so let's thank Dmitry Shevchuk for the interesting presentation. And now we have coffee break. Please go to the hall and have a coffee, tea, and a water. Так, пойдемте.
Время порядка, значит, Сейчас я выключу компьютер. Время порядка, значит, ну 10 тысяч поколений.
Вы не допускаете такую возможность, что просто это состояние, так сказать, невыгодное, да, промежуточное, оно настолько невыгодное, что у вас просто слишком мало было возможностей его реализовать?
Допускаю, пробовал. Значит, дело в том, что, значит, вот этот вот вывод, который касается, значит, того, что скачок должен быть достаточно коротким, именно так к нему и относится. То есть, может быть, в более многочисленных популяциях действительно можно прыгать и дальше. Вот. Но собственно, это вот только одно качество.
Ваша сын называется
нормальный. Computing and some example in bioinformatics that can run on platform in grid computing, which is another way to use high performance computing. So just to introduce the topics, as you know, there is a great potentiality of sequencing genomes. Now the new technology, new machine are capable to sequencing entire genome bacteria in 2-3 days, and probably also the human genome will be resequencing in few days. So what happens is that in future you have to dealing with an enormous amount of information, and clearly you need to assemble, you need to analyze, you have to compare. So this data flow will generate a number of new possibility, but also will be a quite problematic to handle for the amount of data and for amount of the calculation that is necessary. So this is why you need to be prepared about this overflow of informations, data, and need of computational time. As been shown, that the future of biology that are doing experimental lab, actually in the lab will pass 20-30% of the time. The other 70% of the time will be in front of computer in any case. So we should be prepared about this as well. So we are now in the so-called post-genomics. Clearly there is a number of new technology that is important for us, like microarray analysis, proteomics, and metabolomics aspect. So all this aspect is exploding, including the possibility not only to sequence in the genome, but also, as you understand, the potential explosions of information that will be collected in the databases. For instance, although there is a number of genes that is ranging between 30,000, but taking account the alternative splice size, which create a different kind of transcript, and also the post-translation modifications, the protein can be even 1 or 2 million. So we have only, for the moment, only a subset of structure of the known proteins. And soon we'll have to have much more example of that. So also to searching for protein and looking for structure, comparing the structure will be quite a challenge problem. But this is, again, is only the beginning, because then we have to dealing with simulation in the cell. This is what about system biology is trying to do. And the cell are 3 trillions. Of course, then we have to simulated tissue, the organs, and also you need a new model, a new way to handle these things. Okay. So this is why at this point in time we face enormous amount of potentiality, but also we need dealing with a new kind of bioinformatics which accommodate a number of different kind of raw data produced in various PET in order to find when, where, and how the genes are expressed, but not, and also when, where the protein interact. And that is missing information right now. But we hope that in the future that will be possible. But in the other, you have seen the previous lecture, it is quite clear that a number of study has been done, for instance, for analysis of phylogenetics analysis in different organisms, but also in population study. We know there is a very few diversity, but they are there, and we need individual genome in order to understand potentially the aspect that will be useful tomorrow for the personalized medicine. Personalized means that each individual have a different little variation in the genome, for instance, the SNP, and individual mutation that can affect, for instance, the functionality of the drugs, as will be underlined in the next talk. So, this is to understand all this factor will be important. So this is why we need again, and we show some example, how to dealing with the linkage analysis in order to understand, you know, the various potential association study in populations. And also, we just really in the beginning, because if you're thinking that a lab with just a few equipment can produce 10 terabytes of information a year, that is equivalent to 1 million of encyclopedia. Clearly, that is impossible for the single person to read. So it's necessary to automatize all this process. And the time is ready because, I mean, actually, for instance, in our institute, we produce 2 gigabytes every 2 hours. And, you know, if you cannot handle, the problem is quite problematic to analyze this data. And in the older world, it's more data that is accumulated in public database that has been analyzed. So a number of such can be done just using what information are there and to looking in the database and to compare database and to do study on that. So, but if you take in account, as you can see here, now everybody knows what is the Moore laws that say that the capacity of computer will double every 18 months. This is just this one. So our computer will increase. So in 18 months we can buy a new computer that is performing twice as fast and as in performance. But you think in the increase of genomic data or the computational loads that is necessary to perform these calculations, immediately you can see that you are not able to buy enough computer in order to fulfill all these conditions. This is why it's important to learn that it's not the single laboratory can in future solve this problem. We need to be coordinated. We need to have some opportunity to use bigger resources, bigger cluster, bigger machine in order to understand that this flow information or analysis can be performed accurately and be utilized by a lot of people. And this is why computer center, but also grid computing can eventually help on that. So clearly there is a number of other diseases that is important, and I just addressed that we know, you know, the disease that typically are associated with just some specific gene, but now it is the time in which you also have to find the multifactorial disease. That means, again, you know, compare many genes at time and to understand all variations and all potential combinations in order to understand what it is affecting where in all genomes, in order to understand what is the genetic factor in combinations that will produce that kind of disease. So the easy part of bioinformatics and genome is done. So now is the really the problematic part. This is the message. So clearly also there is an environmental factor that will create, again, another amount of data that is important to know and to take in account. So we need a phenotype, we need a medical record, we need imaging, we need a genome. So there is a great variety of data that we need to handle in order really to reorganize what will be the new way of thinking the health. So clearly there is the process that on new genome you need to find the gene, you need then to annotate that in a very fast way, and also you need through other techniques like proteomics or NMR to understand the structure of that and compare. So this is why, I mean, there is a number of methodology that if in order to study, for instance, the drug discovery, you need the docking between protein, or in order to understand what is going on at DNA level for transcription factor, maybe you also have to study based on molecular dynamics or docking to transcription factor and DNA, for instance. And this is taking computer time and need a high performance. So this is why all this, give the visions that we need to thinking in large when you're talking about the future of bioinformatics. Without a proper network of high-performance resources, we'd be stuck soon. And this is important because, as you know, a number of high-performance computing and information communication technology now is available. So internet have done important aspect to assess information easily accessible through the internet. For instance, we have done the example yesterday to assess NCBI and to retrieve sequence. But that is good if you are retrieving few sequence. But if you analyze the entire genome after 2-3 days, that you cannot be done on NCBI. You need to be done locally or in computer that is under your control or near your control. There is no way that you can transfer gigabytes to NCBI and hoping that it can be realized. So this is another message. And the other point is more and more study is not done at genomic level. That is the easy way. Will be done in protein-protein interaction, will be done in docking, will be done in molecular dynamic, will be done in simulations, modeling, will be done in interior gene network simulations. And that will require as well computer time. Clearly, system biology is trying to, starting from the experiment, create some models, understanding the quantitative biology system, make some predictions, and then design what it is, the model that can fulfill the cell design as a cycle. Now, so this, having said that, I will try to introduce some concept about the grid technology. Grid technology in the beginning was thinking as a possibility to use computer as you use in the light. You switch on the light and you have the light. In theory, from the, your laboratory, if you plug your personal computer, in theory, you can launch your application somewhere, you don't know in which computer, the calculation has been performed for you, and give back the result as a light. Unfortunately, it's not so easy yet, but the idea is that having some resources that can be shared, and I will show later some of these informations, that may be possible in the near future. We are working for that. Okay? So this is a paradigm of lights. But to achieve that, we need share data between scientists. So also the data should be accessible and available on this grid. It is necessary to connect the computer in the right way. Clearly the bandwidth, the connection between computer center need to be good enough to transport large amount of information. If not, you cannot compare, for instance, database like BLAST easily, because you have to transform not only the program, but also the data. You should be ready that the data and the computer power will be accessible anywhere, anytime. So that means the reliability of the platform. And you needed to be rapidly growing, inserting new computer, new cluster, new informations without, you know, affecting the existing one. And then it is important the security aspect. Clearly, if you're talking about network so big and the shared computer resources between center nations worldwide, clearly it is important that the security, it is important aspect, and also the monitoring what the user are doing in order to understand what process can be utilized and what not. To do that, this technology, as the other, follow some like a technology curves of maturity. So there is the events of this new technology, there is a developing time, and there is application porting time, and when application and the platform is robust enough, we can utilize in the daily basis. Actually, with the grid, we are just here. We have done, we have completed the developing time, we are porting some applications, the applications show the limits, we improve the infrastructure until we achieve the maturity time. What it is available right now? There is, what to say, it is important to have a computer, but also it's important to have a network. The first time that I went here in Novosibirsk, there was only the Telex. That was quite problematic time. But now, things are really improving, and that allow you to really to work very well also from here. And so, as you can see, there is a network of collaboration between institutes, but also there is a network for the infrastructure. And there is a network between computer center at high level, 10 gigabytes, for instance, between computers, internal network. So where soon a lot of home will have fiber optics, so also you can watch the televisions, you can exchange enormous amount of information even at home. Not 10 megabytes, but even 100 megabytes in each home, in your. So having this bandwidth You can do a lot of more, whatever you are. So, in top of this network, there is a number of projects that has been financed by the European Community. Some of them are try to link the supercomputer like DASA, which is done by a number of supercomputers in Europe to share their resources somehow, and EGE. EGE is a project that try to make a number of computer resources available for grid computing in Internet. And also they launch a number of EGE-related projects that bringing applications or try to rationalize some aspect of this infrastructure. So, as you can see, the amount of money, 35 millions of euros for EGE, is quite a lot. But also from the infrastructure, for the network, we spend quite a lot of money. It's nearly 200 million of euro. So, in FP7, a total amount of 250 million euro has been spent already, because now we have in FP7, this was FP6. So, another amount needed to be provided. Now, try to give deep in this project, which I'm also involved. This is called Enable Grid for Earth Science. So that means to utilize the grid for different application in different branch of science. Okay? So there is a 91 partner in 32 countries. This includes also Russia. There is you have one representative in Russia too, here. And so what is the objective? Is to produce quality of grid infrastructure for a science, is activating new resources used from the industry as well. So there was three projects already done. The first one that is finished in 2006, the second one that is just finished, 2008, and we are just starting a few weeks ago, the AGE3, which is starting in April 88 and will finish in, I think there is something wrong here, it's 2 years' time, so we'll be finishing 2010 actually. Okay, but why they need at least to invent the grid? Simply because a physicist was not capable to handle their data that will be come soon when the new accelerator that you can see in the picture, is our detector, you can see the people here, is a large detector, large experiment. This is our fourth experiment actually in CERN in Geneva. And this experiment will produce enormous amount of data a day. They was not able to put just in a local cluster and to handle that. This is why they provide more cluster in different parts of Europe, and the information can distribute immediately in order to be analyzed by the scientists remotely. So they have to distribute the system because they have the problem. Now, the idea of the European Community say, yes, I give you the money, but these resources sooner or later will be also accommodate other science, like life science, like bioinformatics, for instance. And so what is now the status of this infrastructure? You can see in yellow, the computer center that are linked, and they are participating daily in share the resources in grid. So up to now there is more than 200 sites in 40 countries, and this number of CPU, 30,000, is a bit old now. I think it will be soon 50,000 and probably 100,000 in a few months, because the experiment needed to start and they need to buy the resources, and obviously we'll buy the last minutes because it's cheaper and more performant. But then there will be a large amount of resources to... But also they need the storage, 5 petabytes of storage, and for the moment, each day, more than 100,000 jobs has been launched, whatever, on this infrastructure. And there is more than 200 virtual organizations. What it is, virtual organizations? For instance, if you are bioinformaticians, we have to refer to the community that it can be recognized as a bioinformatics or medical, medicine, and so on. So we have created a virtual organization that is called Biomed, VUO, which is virtual organization for biomedical application. So what means that some cluster is dedicated for the physicist, some cluster allow not only the physicist but also biomedical application. That means that if your job has been recognized as part of biomed, in some cluster you can run, in some cluster not. And this is the way in which the organization can accommodate to have some resources for specific use in this grid. So not all is accessible. It depends on what you are and which kind of virtual organization you are belong to. Okay? Now, clearly to run all these things, you have to build a sort of software that is capable to handle not only the network, not only the resources like a computer, cluster, server, single computer, and so on, in order to be accessible, but also you need a middleware that can contribute in using all this potentiality. So there is a security, for instance, software. You have to be recognized. You have your own personal certificate in order to launch your job. It's not necessary. You cannot just go as an internet and plug your sequence, that's it. You need to upload your certificate, and we are sure that that job is done by you and not something else. Also, if you make something wrong, the people know who are making the problems and can eventually kill the job that has been produced. So there is also the possibility to understand how the resources are reacting, which kind of resources are free in order to submit the job, and how to monitor all this activity in order to be sure that the infrastructure is working correctly. So this is why it is necessary, all this software. And then there is, of course, what is called user interface, so in which your application can be visualized, can be launched, can be retrieved, possible in the same way that using the browser. It's not yet like that, but it's going in that direction. There is a few examples already done in which there is an interface for launching and retrieving the job. So this is for optimal use of the resource, authentications, the different site, job executions, and monitoring the progress. If there is any problems, for instance, if one cluster for some reason is down, we should not submit the job there, and we need to understand. Or if it is not configuring properly, maybe it cannot answer in the certain time, then it will be eliminated by the potential node that is it can be answered, it can be run the job. And also it is necessary a number of software to transfer back the result to the your user interface locally. So in order to do that, the main components are user interface, exactly where you are looking for in your computer, and is where you have to log on in the grid, where you can upload your certificate. When you have done that, the resource broker, so-called, will match the user requirement with the available resource on grid. So you have your job, you describe what you want, what data you need, and for instance, if you're using MPI program, clearly you have to state in descriptions of your job that you want MPI. And resource broker will search only the Mac, the machine, the cluster that have MPI installed. If not, that possibility cannot be worked. And then there is information system that will create a statistic of computer element and storage element. CA is computer element, CA and SE is the storage element. So you have to know if the storage element is full or not and where the, your data are. And then, of course, each file that you have to create, it will be new, unique in all the grid. If not, cannot be retrieved because the names should be different. So the name it will be quite long, and you need something to handle where your file is. This is called file and replica catalog. So this is to localize the grid file and eventually to make a copy of this file to your local user interface. But also, you have a logging and bookkeeping. This is, of course, to understanding what is happening to your job. You have to know it, that you have a submit. You have to know that it's running. You have to know if it is aborted. You have to know if it's finished to calculate. And then there is a computer element. The computer element is what we normally we have done yesterday. When you submit it to the cluster, there is a queue there that pick your job and distribute it to the number of other CPU. So you don't know how many CPU are behind the cluster. But you have in front of you the queue, and this is the computer element is the front end to cluster that can be smaller, bigger, or very large, or even the supercomputer. The storage element provides a large-scale storage for a file. So, suppose that you are here, you are user interface. The first thing that you have to do, you need to have authorizations. That means that you have to authorize from, there is a node of authority, I guess also in Russia. You can ask your personal certificate. Your personal certificate gives access to virtual organizations. When you upload your certificate, electronic certificate, then you can submit the job connected to your certificate. This one will produce a sort of secure way to submit the job, and the resource broker will discover which resources are available using a query. So the query will be done in the information system that understands which are free or empty of job, or the queue that are empty, and because this one when I finish the job, we tell information system that the job is finished, so it's empty, it's waiting for new job. And so the resource broker then will take track of this event, because, for instance, if you make a mistake and you're launching, I don't know, 1 million of blast, and say, well, I send 1 million of blast, but the sequence was wrong. How you can do? You can waiting that everything is finished, or you can kill all your job. So you can. There is a command that can kill 1 million of job. But it is necessary that you are recognized, and then the login know where are located with computer, and only the system know, not you. So you have only to give a same command, and all the system is thinking for you where he has sent these millions of blasts. Okay, so then the job is submitted, and the process is typically like your computer is executed, and when the process is finished, tell that is finished to logging and bookkeeping, and the status will be transmit again to the source broker, and the resource broker will tell you that the job is completed. So until here, everything here is not appearing to you. It's only you submit a job and you check what is the status of your job. That's it. All these things is taking account of so-called middleware of grid. So what happened to the job? So this is your user interface again. Practically, your job can be submitted, can be in waiting in some queue, for instance, has been submitted but is waiting because there is no queue available for the moment. Then is ready. That means is scheduled. That is actually has been accepted to running. This is a running state, and then is done. And then eventually clean out all this event because it's terminated. That's it. And give back the result. So this is simple, but when you're thinking thousands and thousands of CPU in different kind of or even situations for CPU and resources and memory and so on available, MPI or not, you understand this is quite problematic. So there was also other related project to EEG. For instance, with Asia, Central Europe, North Europe, there is also Russia, Southeastern Europe, and USA. So that make a number of partners available, and a quite complex federations on among them. And the second phase also, we have to think that this similar infrastructure as internet may be used also for industry. So the security level and the we need to be also fulfill that conditions as well. So what is the missions of AG is to clearly to implement this infrastructure. First, because it's important for physicists, since they are physicists mainly, but also to show that other fields can benefit of this infrastructure. For instance, biomedicine, computational chemistry, health science, geophysics, multimedia, for instance. Okay, and also one of the goals is to disseminate the knowledge about the grid and to prepare, and this is important, the sustainability of the grid infrastructure. Because the grid infrastructure has been built, is there. But when it's finished the European grant, who pay for electricity? Who pay for maintenance? Who pay for the people? So the sustainability means that the state, various state, various kind of organization will be called for helping them in maintaining the infrastructure. In the meantime, there was a number of projects and initiatives that has been launched in order to understand some potential applications and also to develop new methodology that can be utilized in grid to make it more easier and more robust the system. So there is a big discussions on this middleware. There is other example, for instance, D-grid, Unicore, are different way of looking to the grid. It's not only the AGE middleware that can be utilized, but there is a number of them. And that will create a scientific debate between a computational information technology in order to find the best potential solution in order to emerge. But the general idea of grid will be maintained. Okay. And also there is a number of projects. Some, for instance, will be to develop in the middleware, and some, for instance, like a bioinfogrid, which I'm a coordinator to develop bioinformatic applications using this infrastructure. So there is also industry task force. This one, NESI, is provide example that really has been used in real industry. So need to test the grid for industry requirement, like a banks, like insurance, like a crash test on car, for instance, or airplane. So there is a number of, potential benefit of that. Even Ferrari can use a grid.
Can I be short and brief?
You want to break? Yeah. You are tired?
Я предлагаю, maybe short comments in Russian, okay? Я предлагаю немножко расслабиться, потому что вот я сделал несколько перерыв, сделал несколько комментариев. Идея вот доклада, который делает Лучан, оно заключается в следующем, что объемы данных сейчас в биологии таковы, что даже на какой бы ни был могучий суперкомпьютер, он в принципе не может их обработать. То есть вот вы вчера работали в терминалке, да, за стеной стоял многопроцессорный компьютер, да, и вы там пытались его запускать задачи и знали точно, что он работает у вас, эта задача запускается вот на машине за стенкой. Но в большинстве случаев мощности таких машин будет не хватать, даже какая бы большая она ни была. И поддерживать ее одной организацией совершенно невозможно. Идея заключается, что необходимо все компьютеры объединить вот в такую сеть, и вы сразу будете иметь доступ к огромному количеству машин. Вот здесь говорю, 36 тысяч процессоров, 5 петабайт памяти, это огромные ресурсы. И вы можете со своего компьютера их все использовать. Идеологически, вот файлы качали вы, видео, EMUL там и так далее, вот эти вот пиратские, я думаю, что все качали. Идея примерно такая же. То есть вы точно, когда качаете пиратский файл, вы не знаете, на какой машине он лежит. И в принципе... Здесь идея такая, что ваши огромные данные, они разбросаны по разным системам. Значит, вы можете качать в один кусок файла, допустим, из Новосибирска, другой из Америки. Это вот что касается данных. Но эта система гораздо более гибкая. Она позволяет вам не только данные качать, она позволяет вам запускать задачи. То есть вы заходите в сеть, говорите, мне надо выполнить 1 000 000 операций поиска гомологии с помощью BLAST. И вы не знаете, где она у вас считает. Она у вас считает, может, за стенкой считать. Допустим, освободился компьютер где-нибудь в Калифорнии, свободный суперкомпьютер, который может вам обеспечить из этого 1 500 000 запросов. И он начинает работать. Вы получаете сеть. То есть вот идеология такая, что вы можете со своего локального компьютера использовать всю мощь этой сети. И это позволяет решать просто совершенно другого уровня задачи. И вот дальше Лучан расскажет примеры, когда вы с помощью какого угодно большого суперкомпьютера, у вас денег не хватит на это. А здесь вы получаете сертификат, как там в EMUL на халяву, практически бесплатно, да. И идея такая же, вот у нас была локальная сеть Академорг, все фильмы хранились там на одном сервере. Значит, они поняли, что это, во-первых, с точки зрения закона, незаконно, да. А с другой стороны, они все фильмы хранить просто-напросто не могут. Их огромное количество. И они тогда сеть P2P сделали, где, в принципе, если вы в нее входите, вы можете получать доступ к любому компьютеру и качать любую информацию оттуда. Идея такая, только она более глубокая, потому что позволяет вам еще считать. Ну и подложка, рассказывали, что там нужно иметь специфическое железо, между железом и программами иметь прослойку из программ низкого уровня, которые контролируют, какие машины сейчас в действии, кто вошел, кто вышел. И это все достаточно интересные проекты, они как раз направлены на решение супергигантских задач, в частности, вот церновские задачи по столкновению электронов. И другого способа решить задачи эти сейчас не существует. То есть это вот перспектива. Окей. Еще какие-то вопросы, может быть, будут? Maybe English? Окей. I think we should go further. All right?
Okay. I agree completely with him. You know, now, as you can see here, also a number of projects has been launched in order to making grid country. For instance, EELA project was South America, and even Cuba was even.
I know they
with a little bandwidth, but there is a few computer grid, very few. But
two PCs, I think.
Yeah, and so Baltic grid is a east sort of sea grid is Yugoslavia, Greece, and this country here. China, with China, India, and now recently start also EU Africa, Mediterranean area, EU Med Grid, and so on. So this was also project that tried to create the enlarge the infrastructure even in other countries as well. So maybe soon we can have something EU Russia, who knows?
Novosibirsk maybe.
EU Siberia.
Okay.
Okay, so there is a number of projects, and that is important. So we should go a bit faster because we are only 32 and there is 90 slides. So we'll be here for this evening. So EG operation. Okay, there is a number of software that can. This one, for instance, let you understand where the resources are located and in which way they are functioning with a scale of value, the variability. But also, there is now, with the Google Map, you can visualize where the job is starting, where is executing. So you can really, more or less, in real time, to see where it's going on. This is quite interesting. Your job, I mean. So there is a number of tests and that is important. So there is a software that is doing this functional test. But what is based on the software is called middleware distributions. AG is operated on Glite. Glite was starting as LCG versions. That is based on Globus versions, and then is moving to Glite 3, and now is operating since a year and a half, too. And this is create even more possibility using Globus, but also with a lot of other component as well, which I not go in deeper because it's not the case here. It takes another week to go in deep in these things. But, I mean, there is a specialistic course to do that. So for us now, it's just a matter to understand the main principle and then to show some example in bioinformatics. So of course, needed to be people that can help you centralize monitoring, maintaining the virtual organization, maintaining the web and maintaining the infrastructure. So this is the ticket for months. What is the ticket? The ticket is when you see there is something that is not, you want to make a question, so you open a question and, there is a number of questions that is arising probably because, and you can see, and there is a people that should answer to your questions to solve your problem. So there is authentication. Authentication uses standard, which is X 5509 PKI infrastructure. And also, this is a, let's say, what you call a personal certificate. And the person, your personal certificate will create a sort of sign, a little certificate that is short-lived. So your job is going in the grid, but it's not stay forever. You have only 12 hours connected to you, for instance. If you have to renew, but you cannot run it forever. You should also think in the task that you submit can be limited, because after that, automatically the grid cut your job. So you need also to organize your application in order to fulfill the need or the limitations of the grid. This is because if something, student, for instance, launch a job that can run alone forever, you know, they occupy the CPU forever. That is not possible. Automatically will be cleaned out after a while. So this is a way also to protect by misuse. So there is a VOMS that is provide a way to attribute the certificate proxy and the policy of virtual organizations, of course. So here, for instance, there is also possibility to submit the query to understand what it is monitoring the applications and use the API that is based on some specific SQL statement. So the proxy works like that. There is a possibility, for instance, to do the request on workload manager, your proxy, where it is your file, and or locate an even external potential application by web services, SOAP, for instance, or looking for a specific database for the logging procedure. So, as you can see here, there is a number of data management. So, there is a possibility to replicate the status, to do the file service, like you're using FTP. Of course, in grid, there is a GFTP, grid FTP. Is it something like that? But it can be also more faster, we can go in parallel. So there is a sort of meta-catalog, because if your data may be dispersed in different disks in the grid, then you can, you know, you have to know where the data is finished and collect all together. Suppose that we are doing an interesting project together with the institute here, and they produce data here, and they will produce data in Milan. We want to join it, because then the analysis will be a common join, so we must use, you know, metadata catalog in order to understand when it's created and joining and analyzing all together. So we need an infrastructure to do that. Okay. So the use of grid was starting, as you see, only 5 years, but since then they're increasing the number of jobs per day. They started in 5,000 in 1999, and today will be, as I say, was in April 30,000, and but this was just a couple years ago. Now we are nearly to 100,000, and soon the accelerator will be available, will be even triplicate this amount of job. But and also you can see different kind of experimental for physicists. In particular, you can see Biomed is what we are launching by the bioinformatic applications. All the other are physicists, so we are here. It's increasing. It's increasing, and I show you later why we will be able to increase the computer load. So there is a number of sides is increasing, number of CPU is increasing, and so on. So this is August 2007. So also this CPU time, the number of CPU is increasing. So as you see, because it's a quite heterogeneous system, you need to accommodate a number of other applications. Applications can accommodate also workflow or short job or parallel job or simulations like a Monte Carlo simulations. I don't know. For us, it would be important here the Markov model, for instance. And also accommodate commercial applications, for instance, molecular doping, Flex, or AMBER, so MATLAB, and so on. So these things we need quite a flexible infrastructure. So this is the number of collaborating projects that utilize this infrastructure, but in several fields. For instance, I was involved in this one to coordinate, but there is other, as you can see, UMed, for instance, they are developing other applications, EUChina. EUChina, for instance, try to understand the never-born protein, to understand the protein that is not exist in nature, but they try to simulate and to find one that may be useful for some industrial applications later. So this one in particular are the project that involves some bioinformatics. Now we are here, we are in 98, and we started just these phases, which is another 2 years. And then we don't know. I mean, the point is that we need an infrastructure that can sustain itself, like internet, for instance. That means that a country or organization can maintaining with some help maybe the machine operative, and this will. This is what is going on right now. So, in practically, this phase is because we want to ensure that the grid infrastructure is used today, but also still be there tomorrow, and also that it should be permanent, multidisciplinary, and the user can benefit about this technology. Now, coming back to what it is, the biomedical applications. So we need application for a health, and we need to develop a new intelligent computer method for experimental and theoretical case, because we are also in biology, we'll produce amount of data, and probably it's not only to produce data, it is also the possibility to analyze the data. And who produced the data maybe is not the same person that are the capability to analyze. Maybe we produce the data and you analyze here, for instance. So this is why we start this project. It's called BioInfoGrid. And that this is the web page that where I can find more information. What we try in BioInfoGrid is to try to test in different area, like genomics, proteomics, docking, transcriptomics, database, and some molecular dynamics to see in some challenge how react the grid, and we show some results. But in the meantime, since it has been quite a successful project, a number of other projects has been collaborate, and that is important because to show the collaborations among And the project is always good for Europe and also to exchange information at the level of infrastructure is also a good thing. Practically, we have done a number of things. I just previously summarized a bit, and then I will be deep more in some example. For instance, what we have done is to annotate, for instance, the functional domain in grid, protein functional domain. So, functional domain is done, as you know, by Interpro or a number of databases separately. So we have a separate database and separate the program that you, that are capable to search or in parallel all this system in grid. So you just put your sequence and you get back the analyze. The other thing that we try to do is if we have a surface of protein sometime, you have to know that one thing is to visualize on your monitor. The other thing is to have really detailed description of the surface, and description of surface you can be quite costly depending on the algorithm that you're using, and we try to calculate that in grid because that will be important to utilize the more precisely descriptions of surface that can be used, for instance, later on for docking or to exploring active site. As you can see the previous talk, phylogenetic analysis is quite important. If you're thinking, you know, that to have a large number of species, and if you relax a bit the parameter, also this kind of application can be quite demanding in terms of applications. So this is why we also port some system in order to do a phylogenetic analysis for large-scale sequence. Another thing that we can try to do is to do something a bit more complicated, like analyze some gene expression data. So, for instance, we have ported D-chip in grid and clustering technique in grid, but also we try to make some sort of workflow in order to analyze some data, as has been described here. But another application that we have tested and developed is genotyping grid, because isolate population or disease that are subject to a number of people to have a linkage analysis is quite a constraint in terms of CPU, and we'll talk later on. Another challenge that has been quite that has been utilized is to search for potential drug target. This is an example of avian flu virus, neuraminidase, and you can see what you're searching for. Now, you have a virion. The idea here is to block the possible replications. In order to do that, you have to find the inhibitor that is blocking this possibility. You have to know that this avian flu, it is quite important, especially because if it crosses the barrier, animal, human, then it can cause thousands of people dead. So, and also, it is important because we don't know which mutations will affect and to cross the barrier. So what we have done is to take 7 most probable mutations. So we have 7 target different, incorporate these mutations, and then we're using this target to screening against a number of compounds from the standard database here. So we don't know which compounds are millions of compounds potentially, and all of them we can docking now, grid, we have done, and in order to use the target, making the docking, predicting the binding model, and then, of course, we have to automatize the post-analysis in order to sub-select a number of potential targets that can be tested in the laboratory to see if the drug can be interesting or can be anyhow problematic for other aspects, like toxicity, for instance. So, for instance, you have a compound, you have the target, and then you can test it with docking, and then if there is some energy that is quite convincing, then you're selecting for the future selections. In order to do that, for instance, and this is a nice part of the grid, there was a number of institutions that work together in order to or prepare the data or to launch the applications or to analyze the models. For instance, we prepared the models. France was launching together with others the applications, and Academia Sinica then tried to screening this test, and now also Korea is joining this analysis, not only in viaria but also in malaria, and that was quite an interesting way also to collaborate worldwide. So the point is that I show you that grid is not only grid infrastructure, but can be also the grid of the people, knowledge, because no one has the power to know everything and to have enough manpower to analyze everything. So how is possible that? So first of all, you have to run the job, but the job is not like you are using to. To run, you open your computer and say run and use executable. You have to use this language that is called GDL. JDL. So that means job description language. So you have to describe in the standard way in which then the grid understands what you want. For instance, if you want MPI process, you have to stay there. If you need a database that may be in some storage element somewhere, for instance, BLAST, you need a genomics databases in already in compressed format, you need to know where it is and tell you through this language. And then you're running these applications, and so you can state which input data are where you want the standard error writing and the data sets protocol and the output file where you want, because maybe you want on your user interface or you want to store permanently or temporarily in some storage element. Maybe you are running a computer and it will be easy to say that you want to storage in France or in Taiwan or in Russia, because of transfer maybe also a problem if you so. And then the data process you can use in grid FTP to retrieve and to shift. Okay, so typically if you're looking, I mean, the user interface, what you can see, first of all, there is your identity. You see, there is a personal certificate. In this case, was my collaborator. And this tells you the what kind of virtual organization I'm using. In this case, we're using Bio. So he created a proxy file taking account his personal certificate, and then he contacting the VUO. And that has been done in creating the, let's say, the certificate that can allow to run the job. And then he submit, in this case, was IDEMARCO model, Hammer. And the argument is the input sequence, the output file was this one, the standard error was standard error, without, and the input sandbox is where you can find then the program and the input in your user interface. When it's going in grid, you don't know where it is. You have only to say where you storage your output file in storage. That's it. Okay? So in the end, you prepare a GDL file. GDL, you see, point GDL is what is the script that handle your job. And through this command, adg job submit, the output and these descriptions is doing everything. So, practically. So this is for submissions, and this is to ask for the status of the job. And asking for the status, he tell you that for the moment this job is running, that it was submitted, and he also tell you where it is in this moment located. When it's finished, he tell you that it is successful and terminated. And then you know that your file has been created in your user interface with eventually the error and if there is any. Maybe your program doesn't find something or was not able to, as yesterday, to read the multi-alignment. So he tell you in the standard error. Okay. Now, I try to go in some example. If you not, it's quite boring, this user interface. But it's useful to understand the complexity behind.
Probably next time we'll have a special seminar on grid. Yeah? Next school.
Next school we can have it 2-3 days. Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's taking a bit. Yeah. So when will be in Altai?
Yes, we have enough time. I think it, for the an hour, it's okay. Half an hour, it's okay.
I have a half hour now.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, not 3 days, half hour.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay, and sorry, but I'm a bit lonely because I think that it's important. Maybe do less, but understand exactly what is going on behind or in a general picture. Then you know. Example can be any. I mean, there is a... for instance...
Some comment in Russian. Так, в основном закончилась описательная часть. Сейчас Лучана расскажет про применение этой технологии для анализа структуры белков. Вот один из примеров был, который он показывал. С помощью такой технологии разрабатывались блокаторы гемагглютинина вируса птичьего гриппа. Вот там была картинка вируса, и разрабатывалось целых 7 моделей, поскольку вирус очень сильно мутирует, очень быстро мутирует, и были предложены блокаторы белковые, которые блокируют взаимодействие вируса и клетки. Вот нужно было перебрать огромное количество комбинаций вот этих белков, посмотреть их структуру и попытаться заблокировать вот эти участки связывания белка и клетки. Вот это было сделано с помощью системы GRID, потому что по-другому просто не хватило бы ресурсов. Окей.
Okay, I skip just in so on to go faster because mm-hmm. it's still a number. But this, to give you an example, for instance, I mentioned that we use, for instance, the functional domain analysis, right,
okay.
for protein. Now, what do we have done that? Since there are many databases, we need an input database in which we coordinate the number of sequences that to be analyzed, and then we have the executive manager that is monitor the database, and to the user interface we launch in the resource broker. This is GRID, but the result is going back in our database. So we know what is finished, what is not, and if there is any problems there. And then we can query. Similarly, we can, for instance, use database in GRID. Database in GRID usually are, in our case, in biology, are flat file, right? So we have BLAST is a flat file of sequence. But what happens if we wanted to update? For instance, all the EST is a big file, so we need to transfer. So instead to delay it and transfer, we have done sort of system in order to make a replications only for the part that is necessary and not all, and then rebuild the database in the computer element without moving big part of the database, but only what is necessary to reduce the bandwidth. Okay? This is an example. But also it's important to make a post-processing, because if you're generating a lot of output file, not all information is necessary. Maybe it's useful only few data. For instance, in the case of docking, the energy and few informations instead to have giant number of descriptions. So maybe you can utilize that in order to make more cleaning the data, and you put the relevant data in computer element or in your local database, in a remote database that you can query. For instance, what we have done is taking the blast, and you say, okay, we have a human ST, and we can just blast all in grid. So we have a human ST, using the full data set, and so we have two examples here. We use UniProt and human ST, and make it just a blasting grid. And so we can divide a chunk of sequence that should be, so in order to create a number of jobs, 1,580 in this case, that can be running in a different CPU. So each chunk of this job is containing 5,000 of sequence, for instance. And then if you try to do this on your own computer, that means something like 2 years of CPU time in your computer, right? Because we have to realize something like 7 million of hits in blast. And you have achieved something like 600 megabytes of output. Now, here is what is the submissions phase in your 1,500 jobs. As you can see here, there is some gap, and this is because it's best to avoid to put everything going, because also the resource broker needs to have a time in order to understand which resources have to allocate the job. So that may be a bottleneck. So that when you submit a chunk of job, maybe can go for a while in saturation, and then it will be free again, and so on. So the submission phase grid is more problematic than a cluster, because a cluster is one queue, and when you saturated the queue, is waiting until the end. But grid needs to find which are the queue free, and it takes a bit more time. So grid take more time than the cluster to execute things. But in the meantime, it is a resource that is available. Another example that we have done is, for instance, the tissue macroarray. So we're using some imaging for tissue, some imaging to elaborate, and then we send to computer element to make each imaging to elaborate in order to find, for instance, normal pathological tissue. Okay, now try to describe a bit more what have been done in linkage analysis. This part of presentation for who has been in conference has been also presented in the conference. So in this case, the logic is that we need to analyze the SNP, SNP, which is single nucleotide polymorphism. And as you know now, there is a number of potential chips that are capable to produce on a whole genome scan starting from 10,000 up to 1,000,000 of SNP for each experiment. So this is great, automatically 2 gigabytes or more data every analysis. That means every 2 hours, right? So in this case, for instance, if you make an example of 26 individuals, we obtain a number of jobs. And we can submit it to the grid. So, and we wanted to test how is the performance of grid. So clearly, we need an interface to launch these applications, and that is called presentation layer, where we can create our workflow, we set in the parameter, and we submit it to the grid and the cluster. Because we wanted to test our local cluster that is 300 core, 300 CPU, and the grid to see how, you know, the performance was in the optimal and then in potential grid. And then that will create a XML file, which is just a standard way to describe the creation of the file, and the applications will parse the XML and will create the process to then submit it to the grid. So, and that is a high-performance computer layer. When the job is finished in grid, it will be retrieved and then will be presented to the web page. That is the idea. So you can create the workflow, as has been shown here, and each one you have the parameter and you set up the parameter by browser. This is to make it easier for the user to not to see anything like a black windows that I showed before. So you choose the browser and that's it. So you created the XML file and then you are ready to submit the job. What happened when you clicking OK, I run, it taking your data, your certificate, your parameter, it create a workflow, it create a number of jobs to divide in, and then there is a system that we developed that is called VUNAS, which is thinking to submit the job, the grid, until that is finished and retrieve all the result and be back to you. Why it is necessary another, you know, system in the middle? Because some job is maybe pending for a while, or lost, or is not aborting. So you need also to calculate that. So you need to keep track of all. And that is exactly what is trying to do, this software that we develop. It tries to submit the job, and in the meantime, it's monitored for you automatically and fetching the result. So this is mask the complexity they are behind the grid. So this is make a reliable abstraction of grid and try to minimize the problems of no a long command or complex parameter to set up and command line. And then there is a callback mechanism to store the result in your local database. Okay, so there is a garbage collections and prevent the user leftover on the storage element, the result, and so on. So all these applications is, you know, done by sort of this script. Now, just to run some tests, for instance, if you're keeping the easy part, so just 1,000 SNP, we have 25 subject, that we create a number of run, 50 for instance, and then each run is something like 10 minutes. So in this case, we are waiting for 33 hours on the single CPU, and this is the easy case. Now, if you put in the graphics, this what I'm just describing the first line, right? 10,000. And we have a single CPU, we have a 33 hour. But if you increase in the chip up to now, the most use is 360 chip or 500,000 chip. But now on the market there is also these two, recently, until 1 million for genome scan, one single person, right? So one single person need then to run a number of jobs. And if in your single CPU, that means 3,300 hours. So this is impossible, practically, on the single CPU. And so here we compare with our cluster that is 280 CPU and the grid in EG. So you can see here that on our local cluster, which is a high performance because it is a high bandwidth, we have almost very low latency because it's InfiniBand between disk and the CPU, is only 20 hours. But on the grid, it's coming to 100 hours. But still, if you look at the performance, clearly the cluster is performing well, but here there is some overhead, especially in the beginning, because we have to submit the job, you have to find the queue, you have to find the resource available, and so on. But when you find it, you submit the job, this is scaling quite well, and if you look in your local CPU, single CPU, will never finish after a while. So that teach that, yes, there is a sort of problems in using grid because it's less performant than having a cluster in your home. But also it is, this cluster is always there, and when you finish your calculate, maybe it is still there because your institute have no other job, but some other can utilize. So the grid will be sort of load all the time because some other in the world or whatever will use these resources. So that somehow is will be, if you remember the beginning, the data and the possibility to analyze. If we don't put in factor common, the resources worldwide, probably we finish that everybody will be more or less paralyzed unless they have a money for a large cluster for his own lab, which maybe not. Okay, so in this case, these are some results. In this test case, typically you have the log score, which is the system to understand if there is evidence that the linkage analysis are capable to mark the potential disease, and if it is less than 3, that there is no evidence. If it is even negative, that excludes any potential linkage. In this case, instead, which is we use 1 million, and we have done that for 24 patients. The running time for job is 30 minutes. And so the number of run with the Gene Hunter will be 12,500. So in the end, this is the result that we achieved. So in this part here, on the left, you can see the non-parametric linkage analysis has the result as shown by the linkage analysis. But then you can elaborate a bit and some noise in go away, and you can see much better the peaks you see here. And the similar, then you are capable to understand if it is more than 3, for instance, there is high probability that there is a linkage between the market and the disease. And then you should study very well these regions of chromosome or genome in order to understand if there is the disease that is due to this SNP in that point. Okay. So in conclusion, this application is capable to launch linkage analysis on the GE, can help the user to create a less complicated interface and so on. So just to conclude, there is a new technology that information communication technology, ICT, is offering to us. So there is a grid, but also there is agent, there is a capability in data mining, workflow, ontology, semantic, let's say Web 2, and all this technology can generate a new wave of algorithm and data mining in bioinformatics that can help us to connect more biological informations of gene, protein, metabolic pathway, with the ultimate goal is to understand the patient disease. So to have a dedicated high-performance computer as a local cluster, or bring this cluster, that's also possible, you can utilize as a local cluster, but also to offer part of CPU to grid, that will create a potential strategy in order to make a common factor the infrastructure that can be important for developing a new results in the field of biotechnology and biomedicine. So clearly the massive potentials of high-performance computer grid technology will be indispensable with dealing with both the complexity of the model and the enormous amount of data that we face on in the next generations. So this effort is due to not on one person, not one institution, not one project, but maybe the result of several tentatives, several projects, several ideas that can be shared and then can be put in the common factor to create a new infrastructure that can be utilized in future for all of us. Thank you.
Any questions? Please.
Two connected questions. First one is that the more complicated and powerful is a grid, and more advanced is your technology, the more complicated applications from the most unpredictable areas of knowledge or technology may be implemented. So, I didn't understand. If you have a mechanism for others, I mean, not the members of narrow club of the maintainers, to develop their own software and try it on a grid. Like, I'm a user, but I invented a program, I wrote a program, which would, I think, benefit from, if it is run on a grid. Is there a mechanism to just to try my own program? This is my question. And connected question is that, well, like, say, in molecular dynamics, they are very, very complicated applications. Something like about 100 parameters to be supplied for your simulation. The amount of personal experience in fighting the program and the grid becomes more and more valuable. Do you plan some specific mechanisms for sharing that experience? Maybe even outside the a little bit wider club of the users of your particular grid. Thank you.
Now, the first question is, yes, we should provide a sort of called test bed in which the user can have a temporary access for try. It is called GILD, for instance, which create, if you haven't a temporary certificate, then you can test on a subset of machine, but with the same configurations. If it is an important project and important data, maybe you can contact directly me, and then maybe we can do an example on large scale, that because it takes... Secondly, we are doing a number of school, including for bioinformatics. I was developing already 2 years in Biomed Grid school in Italy, for instance, and will be also next May in Italy as well. Maybe we should understand if we may have sessions the next, also your school, to test it really. So the point is, to start it from scratch, you need, you know, as you understand, a lot of vocabulary and a lot of problems. But if you have the help of who have already achieved that level, maybe some application can be gridified in quite short time. So eventually contact me and then we see what we can do. Secondly, molecular dynamics. Yes, we use AMBER, for instance, in GRID. But GROMAX. Now, let's say there is a program and program. GRID is good when you have a single job that can be parallelized very well or distribute very well. In molecular dynamics, you have to have the first result and then to make the second step, third step. So it's more like step by step. So if you are capable to share what you are looking for in molecular dynamics, also that can be gridified in some sense. The user can interact, yes, but that can be interacted in science in order to optimize the parameter, to exchange idea, and to suggest to the wiki, blog, whatever parameter is more useful for molecular dynamics. GRID itself will be useful only to have a large challenge program that perform at high level that is not possible even in a local cluster. And that is an effort. By tomorrow will be, not tomorrow, but also soon it will be possible to launch even GRID, BLAST, or other, there is already several programs that is being already porting GRID easily. So the point is to make an interface that will be similar to internet, and that also we are developing as well, that it take a bit more time to be flexible and to be verified. But it's coming like that.
Thank you. Okay, any more questions? Okay, now we would like to thank the panel. And that's the end of our first part of the day. And I would like to speak about our further program. The next lecture will be from Srinivasan Ramachandran. It will be at 3 o'clock. And then we have a seminar by Daniil Naumov. And at 8 o'clock evening, we have an excursion to Novosibirsk. From the bus will come from Zlatoya Dolina Hotel. And we hope that the weather will be fine and we will get right to the firework festival dedicated to the Novosibirsk City Day that is today. Today is the special day of the year for Novosibirsk. They are celebrating the 115th century of the city. So I think that it will be quite interesting. Okay. Thank you. Have a nice lunch. One question. They are doing, but not ready. I hope that it's not.